I'm Mary Jo, and I'm an adult child of an alcoholic. And I'm probably going to cry a lot, because I do that when I tell my story, no matter how long it's been since I've been in these rooms. I was thinking about how to start. When we do speaker meetings, it's about telling how it was, what happened, and how it is now. And so I was thinking, well, how am I today? And I think about the traditional response to that, which is fine. I'm fine. But today I am tired, and I want to acknowledge that I am, and that's okay, and that I'm in a room full of people who can understand that, and that what I say tonight isn't going to be perfect, and that's okay, and I'm good with that, and you'll take away what you get. What you find that you can identify with. My journey of recovery and discovery is about finding out who Mary Jo really is, and not who she was groomed to be. And so that's a lifelong journey for me. I've been in ACA for 28 years. And when I say that, I sometimes think that people say, well, think to themselves, well, wow, she must have it all together, or she figured it all out already, or you know, any other number of things, or how come she's not better than she already is, than she is, you know, a lot of things. But the reality is for me is, and I sometimes joke and say that I'm a slow learner, but I'm not a slow learner. I mean, kind of self-deprecating humor that I use, but it really isn't the reality. I'm not a slow learner. I'm somebody who keeps looking and seeking and trying to find, you know, peel that next layer of the onion, and there's so goddamn many layers. Sorry. But there's also so many opportunities that present themselves to find what that next layer is and how to deal with it. And I am grateful for every single opportunity, no matter how painful it is at the time. But I have immense gratitude for that. And Karen and I talk a lot, and we talk about opportunities. And isn't that a great opportunity? And try to put, you know, yes, it's a great opportunity. When I'm dealing with somebody that I'm having a problem with, somebody who pushes my buttons still. Because some of those buttons run really deep, and when that's happening, it's another opportunity to figure out another piece of that pie, and so yes, I'm grateful for those opportunities. A bit of my history is that I am the oldest of six, and my mother was 18 and pregnant when they got married. My dad was 28, and he was an alcoholic. He was a son of an alcoholic, and both of my parents' mothers died when they were young. And my mother had to raise her brothers and sisters because her mother died when she was 14. My dad's mother died when he was 7. And so they had, you know, not much to work with when I came along. And as the oldest of six, I was really over-responsible. Starting at the age of 2.5 or 3, when my brother's stroller, he went down the stairs in a stroller, and I was told it was my fault. And from that point on, it was years before I let him out of my sight, because it was my job. You know, there are a lot of bellwether events throughout the years that happened, but my dad was a daily drinker, and he even worked in a brewery. How great is that? And they could drink at lunch, they can drink on breaks. And so, I mean, just bizarre. my childhood trauma was waiting for him to come home and what was going to happen. And who was going to get yelled at, beaten, usually my brother. And so just a lot of things that a lot of us have experienced. So it's not new to many of you to have experienced something like that. But the hypervigilance that it set up in me, and PTSD, which is what we talk about a lot now. The terror of waiting for him to come home and worrying about what's going to happen. So one of the things that I think about in my childhood is in school, being that kid sitting there, I knew the answer, but I wouldn't raise my hand on the off chance I was wrong, because you couldn't be wrong in my family, and I couldn't take a chance on being wrong in school. So a lot of, you know, things like that. In trying to figure out who Mary Jo really is, besides that kid who grew up in those circumstances, when in recovery, Mary Jo turns out to be somebody who loves to explore things, have fun, learn new things, and that wasn't the kid that I was growing up. I grew up, so to speak, until when I was in college. I married an alcoholic, so it was very atypical. I went from that and married an alcoholic because that's what I knew. That's the kind of relationship I knew. And we had two daughters, and through the process of, we had been married about 13 years, and when there was a situation that happened, but I had become steadily more hypochondriacal. Is that a word? As I started into that, I realized, where do I go with that word, because I said it improperly in that sentence. But I'd become a hypochondriac. I was going to the doctor all the time. Please tell me there's something wrong physically to explain why I feel so crappy all the time, why I feel so bad. And fortunately, I finally went to a doctor who said, I think you need to see a therapist because we can't find anything wrong with you. And I guess I was really lucky that I didn't have anything physically wrong with me at that point. And in doing so, I saw a therapist who very clearly and very soon said, well, you're living with an alcoholic, no wonder. And we're talking back in the early 80s. And, you know, still was not something we talked about a lot even then, or at least not where we were. And so we were going for it. I convinced him to go for an intake at a hospital to get evaluated. And he agreed, you know, which was interesting. And so we had an appointment on a Tuesday or something like that, I guess, and the weekend before the appointment, he got so drunk that he was going to go beat up the neighbor. A guy who, and my 8-year-old daughter and I were pulling him back in the house. And that was the beginning of the beginning, or the end of the beginning, or whatever, I don't know. But I didn't know who to call because I'd become so isolated in my dysfunction and my depression, really, which is, that's all, the only way to describe it. I was extremely depressed. And I called my brother-in-law, who we hardly ever saw, and I said, I don't know what to do here. And he came over, and he was in AA, and we didn't even know it. Sometimes you can be a little bit too anonymous. But for whatever reason, I called him, and I guess that's a higher power moment to have decided he was the one to call. And he took him, took my husband to Dan to an AA meeting the next morning. And he never drank again. Completely atypical, or not normal. Well, he's not normal. No, anyway. Actually, we've been married 40 some years. And I've always jokingly said, I have it. I say, 22 of the best years of my life. Because, you know, an acknowledgement of the fact that we've gone through a lot of not so great times, but we've had, you know, two great kids. But we did go to that intake program and our intake visit, and they decided, well, he's going to AA meetings. He seems to really have be taking, you know, like, wow, like a duck to water. He's taking to meetings. But you're a mess. Me. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I kind of already knew that. And so they sent me to their family recovery program. And that was mostly for spouses of alcoholics at that time. And so I went through that weekend. And I think we were on the last day, and we did a lot of group therapy over the three-day period. And we were sitting in a meeting, a group therapy session, and a woman said, well, thank God it didn't affect my kids. And I just about jumped out of my skin, because I knew for myself, and I knew for my own kids, that, you know, oh, kids are resilient, they bounce back. I wanted to say bullshit. But I did literally jump up and scream, that's so wrong. And so I knew. And after that, I started an Al-Anon. That was my first 12-step program. And I was really lucky to find a wonderful Al-Anon sponsor right off the bat. And so wonderful, in fact, that within a couple of years she said, I just heard about this new program, or fairly new program, called Adult Children of Alcoholics, and I think that's where you belong. And truer words were never spoken. So she started educating me on it. There weren't that many meetings in my vicinity, but there were a lot in the area. And the first thing I was able to do was I went to a Claudia Black retreat in Ohio. We drove, a couple other people, we drove from Chicago to Ohio and went to a retreat. And I knew, I just knew that was where I needed to be, that that my issues started long before my marriage. And so we did that and came back, and there were three of us, and we were going to start an ACA meeting, and the other two decided not to. So it was me, and I started my first meeting, and I found somebody else who said she'd come and do it too at the last minute. And I had had this sponsor in Al-Anon, but then when it came to ACA and sponsorship, that was a tough one. And I'm thinking about that now, because we just had a sponsorship workshop over the weekend in Chicago area, and that's another journey that I maybe I'll touch on. But so that was back before we had the big book. We had tons of meetings. Many of you know the history of ACA, or some of you may not, but we had a lot of meetings. We'd been on Oprah. There were a lot of books starting to be written, and it was kind of the flavor of the day in a lot of ways. It was great from a numbers perspective, but a lot of meetings weren't very functional. I don't want to go too much into telling the history because I'm sometimes I do that, you know. But for me, I stuck around, and sometimes I wonder why or how. We didn't have the Red Book. We latched onto whatever 12-step book we could find that even related to adult children. And there were some out there, but there were others that were kind of loosely but related, but we found them and we read them. And we read the steps over and over, month after month, and that's what we did. And it kept me coming back. It became my salvation. But I really do look at it sometimes and think, is it my overdeveloped sense of responsibility that kept me coming back? What was it? Or was I just seeing just enough progress and change in myself that I knew that that's where I needed to be and I knew that it's where I needed to stay? And I think it was maybe a combination in some cases, but I knew that I was changing. Things were changing in my life. As my daughters got older, I knew that the relationship I had, especially with my older daughter, was something that I never had with my mother and never could have with my mother. If she was having a problem, she'd come to me and talk about it. My God! You know, that was just a whole foreign concept in my family. Of course, the time she came to me and she said, "Mom, I really have to tell you something." You know, the way she said it, it was like, "Oh my God, is she pregnant or what's going on?" So then I said, "You know, when you got to talk to me, please let's have different rules about how you approach me." But and not that, you know, if she had been, we would have dealt with it. But definitely, but the gratitude that I have for that. And that's what this program gave me. It gave me the feeling of not making it into me, my problem. Because that's what my mother did. If you brought anything up with her, then she turned it around and made it all about her. Or if I said that there was anything wrong, then she got on the pity pot and she became the victim. Oh, woe is me, you know, I didn't do anything right, and so on. I couldn't talk to anybody like that. I didn't want to, but with my daughters, I was able to do that and let and listen. But the interesting part of that, or all the way through, there were times where I found myself reacting in a way that I didn't feel good about. When I was growing up, I wasn't one of the popular kids. Until I was 12 years old, I wore hand-me-downs from other families. We didn't have much money because we had a house, a home, but there wasn't money for new clothes or anything because my dad was drinking it. And my mother gave me these god-awful perms that, you know, there used to be these commercials with, you know, the frizzy perms. Well, you know, at some point that part kind of became the style, but when I had them, it certainly wasn't. And I look at those pictures and I now embrace that little girl who was so embarrassed by all of that, that she was okay, but she didn't feel okay because she stood out and nobody understood her. And when I went home to my mother and I tried to tell her that somebody had said something mean to me, well, big deal, you know, get over it. And I still cry about these things because I'm still working through little parts of them. And that's okay. I'm 66 years old, and it's okay that I'm still working through pieces of this. Because part of me sits here and thinks, why? Why am I still working through this? But it's okay. But getting back to my daughter, she was more of a popular kid, and there was a part of me at one point that was really jealous of that, and I didn't know how to respond to that, and I didn't respond well, and so I had to really examine that those insecurities that I had as a kid, and make it okay for her to be who she was. We continue to work through things, and even as like I'd say 2 years ago, when she was married, and there was I always felt like I was being compared to her mother-in-law, and that everything that her mother-in-law did took precedence, and we were having a conversation, or she called me one night, and she told me that I didn't have to do something that we'd already planned on because her mother-in-law was going to do it, and I made some snide comment, and she said, well, why did you do that? And I said, you know what? I don't know, and I want you to stay on the phone until I figure out why I said that, because I needed to know what it was in me that was still doing little things like that. And I'm grateful for having the willingness to do that instead of just, oh, you know, no big deal. So the program has given me the ability to be honest with myself when I allow myself to be honest, when I give myself permission, or I tell myself it's time to be honest. It has given me I've given myself permission sometimes to wear my heart on my sleeve when that wasn't okay to do for most of my life. As I said, I look at all the opportunities that I have, and I'm grateful. I have some struggles in my marriage right now because there are things that were going on that I wasn't paying attention to well enough, or that I was just brushing under the carpet, and I tell myself, why did I wait this long to deal with these things? But it's okay. I keep telling myself, I'm not perfect. Nobody gets out of this alive perfect, or, you know, whatever, what's the saying? Anyway, there's no guarantee of perfection in this program. It doesn't matter how hard you work. I can't let you walk out of here with a guarantee of perfection. It's just not going to happen. It is. We're each unique, and we deal with what we have, and how far we want to go with it. And for me, you know, I've been in and out of therapy for most of the time I've been in program. I'm back in therapy again with somebody new who we're doing inner child work and dealing with generational grief. And I've known about her for a long time, thought about going to her, put it off, went to somebody else instead who didn't work out, and then wanted to say, well, why did you waste all that time with this other person? Well, I didn't waste that time because I knew sometimes we have situations that teach us what we don't want. And that's what it was with this other therapist. Spending the time with her made it real crystal clear in my mind what doesn't work for me. And that helps. So so I'm starting this new with the new therapist, and I've been seeing her about a month, and I'm bawling my eyes out all over again, and it feels good. Something that's interesting about how she does it, though, when I cry and I want to swallow back, you know, you get saliva in your mouth when you cry, she keeps telling me, don't swallow it, spit it out. Never heard that before. I don't know, maybe other people have. So that's interesting to me. I can't do that yet, but feels weird, but maybe I'll get there. I'm grateful for the opportunity to be working in service for ACA, and I couldn't do that when I was working full time because one of my character defects is that I'm a workaholic, and so I get a little bit more involved sometimes than I should, or not. There's no shoulds. One of my first therapists after I got into ACA and I've heard this a lot since then, he said, don't should on yourself. And so I try not to use that word. It keeps creeping back in, but shoulda, coulda, woulda. So I'm grateful that I have the time to do it now, and service for me offers the opportunity to learn another set of balance, you know, balancing my life. So I don't know how much time I have left, but I think
15 more
minutes. Oh my God. Well, you don't really want to hear it. Well. I have one granddaughter, and her name is Julia, and she's going to be 3 in October, and I babysit for her 2 days a week. And I have a lot of friends who say, well, why would you do that? That's a lot of time. That's a big time commitment, you know. I wouldn't do that. And then I start thinking, why am I doing that? Well, I know why I'm doing it. I want to have a relationship with her because she lives an hour away. And also, she's teaching me how to play. She really is. Using her giant-sized Lego blocks, building a tower. And the first time she said, she didn't even say it, she just knocked it over, and I went, she knocked it over. Oh my God, that's I guess that's how you play. You build things and you knock them over. I didn't know how to do that. I swear to God, I didn't know how to. And watching her do that a few times, it took a while for me to be comfortable with her knocking it over. And then finally she said one time, she said, Grandma, you knock it over. And it really was perfect. And so I knocked it over, and I realized, you know, that kind of feels good. Because I'm so rigid in even in play, rigidity. And so she truly is teaching me how to play and be freer than I have been, because I wasn't that way as much with my own kids. Because I was stuck in the dysfunction of my marriage and my depression and everything. So I have a lot of gratitude for the fact that I'm able to babysit for her and willing to babysit for her, and that I don't listen to other people who are saying, oh, why do you want to do that? Oh, that's a huge time commitment. And it's not for everybody. I mean, I'm not saying that the rest of the world should go out and do that, but for me, it's really a positive experience, and of course she's smart as a whip and smartest kid in the world. So I'm proud of her, but I'm immensely grateful for that. And so I just want to, I'm going to end with that this was an opportunity for me to come here and walk in this room and feel tired and overloaded and still make it okay to be here and to tell you whatever came out of my mouth, and that and let go of it and hope that it works for you as much as it's helped me. So thanks for listening.